I think together we can really look at how some of the existing problems that exist in the world today and think, all right, where do we need more tech? Where do we need more policy? Where do we need more advocacy? Where do we need citizen groups coming out and saying, this is how I want my community to look. And this is how I want to interact with it. This is how I want to exist within it and whatnot. And I think a lot of that needs to be, you know, citizen driven. And so understanding this intersection, understanding this, these dynamics, it's really, really important. And I think there's so many ways that we can continue to do that together.
Welcome to Smart in the City, the Babble podcast. I am your host, Tamlin Shimizu, and really at Babble, we aim to connect the players in the smart city industry with high quality information and ideas through our platform and services. This podcast is really an extension of this goal and mission to drive the change for a better urban life. So today I am back actually in the Babble studio in Stuttgart, but traveling into the world of heat waste reuse. First, I have to introduce you to a special guest on the podcast, my esteemed colleague and Smart Cities consultant, Miguel Mosca. Welcome, Miguel. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tamlin. It's a pleasure being here today with you and our other guest.
Yeah, and also a big welcome to our other guest today, who is Michael Ogia, the Director of External Relations at the Sustainable Digital Infrastructure Alliance, or SDIA. Big warm welcome, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tamlin. It's my pleasure, Miguel. Thank you both so much for hosting me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. And really, before we kind of get into the meat of the conversation, so to say, I guess I want to start off asking you both a bit of a silly question. If SDIA were a superhero, what would its power be?
Obviously flying. No, I honestly don't know. Like that is a good question. So should it be a superhero superpower, or should it be something aspirational to what we actually hope to achieve?
I think it should be a superhero superpower. And then later on, we can dig into the actual aspirations.
Okay. I think I've got it, mm-hmm. just because we are all about sustainability.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the full suite of powers that Captain Planet had.
Okay. Which ones are those?
I just remember that Captain Planet could, for instance, go around and clean up ecosystems and, he could fly, which means we don't have to spend carbon on any emissions from aviation. So yeah. I guess that's a plus. But yeah, I would go with that. I think that's most relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good to me. And now the question turns to Miguel. If Babble
no
was
pressure.
A, yeah, no pressure. It's a tough question. If I'm starting off hard here, not deep, but hard. If Babble mm-hmm. was a superhero, what would its power be?
Well, since we already have the pleasure of being with Captain Planet here, thanks, Michael. It was a very good insight. But I think for Babble, I could go a bit cheesy and say we want making someone that just touches a city and makes it super livable. I would say I'll go with something easier. I think the superhero power would be that we just swallow carbon emissions. We just transform it. You know, we swallow, we breathe it, and we take it out as the proper gases of the atmosphere that should be there in their real quota.
And then it just comes out and it forms these like beautiful streets.
Yes, like in the form of a rainbow.
Galactus, devourer of carbon.
Yeah.
You got the prize for the name.
Right? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's no worries. That's actually a real like Marvel villain, I think. Yeah, Galactus or whatever. So maybe it could be Babel, destroyer of carbon. You know.
That's pretty good.
The only tiny difference is we don't want to be a villain. But that's okay.
You're going to be teaming up with Captain Planet. Are you kidding? We're in this together. Collaboration.
awesome. Collaboration. And that's a good starting point for our few questions. I think it would really help if we got a little bit of background about what is SDIA, Michael, and if you can just summarize a bit of your goals and activities.
Of course. The SDIA is a nonprofit network that is co-based in the Netherlands and Germany that brings together our, well, now way more than 65 members and partners to essentially create a sustainable digital economy. And the way that we're trying to do that is that obviously we focus on sustainable digital infrastructure. The idea being that if you take an entire, if you look at the entire value chain underpinning the digital economy, there's 30 plus industries all across the sector, from energy provision and generation all the way up to software. And so the idea that we had is that if we really want to make an impact and make the sector sustainable, we need to bring all of these sectors together to work in a much more holistic, systems-based, collaborative way. Because otherwise, most of the sustainability initiatives are very piecemeal. And, you know, for instance, even if you take just decarbonization, that's a huge goal. That's a huge thing. Yeah. But that's actually just one part of the sustainability puzzle. That doesn't address biodiversity. It doesn't address plastics. It doesn't address critical mineral mining. It doesn't include e-waste dumping. I mean, there are in pollution. There's so many things to take into account. And while the scope is big, one of our biggest value adds, in addition to bringing these different sectors together, is that we are focusing very strongly on making the business case for sustainability via our roadmap to sustainable digital infrastructure by 2030. In other words, as much as we can support sustainability, if it's not economically viable, it's not going to be itself sustainable in the long term. So for us, we're very, very, it's all about saying, okay, what kind of policy tweaks need to happen? What kind of technological innovation needs to be facilitated? What kind of, incentives or subsidies should we be advocating for? So SDIA kind of is working to engage with our community to push these things forward along the 6 metrics of our roadmap and the more than now 21 activities that we have that we're working to realize over the next 10 years.
That's an amazing summary. Thank you. And I think we can echo from our side as well that it's truly a pleasure to be officially partners and to be, you know, collaborating more on so many of these different topics. So, and I guess here I would like to dig in a bit more into a specific topic. Right now, obviously, we're speaking very high level and digging a bit deeper into a topic I know you're very passionate about, Michael, which is heat waste reuse. So I guess first describe what does that mean for people who don't know?
There's a lot to go through. So if you're listening to this and be like, huh, what? Just don't worry. We'll walk you through it. So let's start at point A. Point A is that digital infrastructure traditionally has not been something that you really see. It's a bit like an iceberg. The internet itself is a bit like the iceberg. Like, you might see a little bit of it, but most of it is underwater. Now, that is both literally in that a lot of internet infrastructure, like submarine cables, runs under the oceans, connects continents, or is even orbiting above us, you know, in terms of communication satellites and whatnot. But the bit that you do see that kind of pops up, a bit like a mushroom cap, if you're to go to the sustainability, kind of imagery, is most of what people might think of when they think of internet infrastructure are things like your router in your home, or maybe the mobile communications tower that's up in your neighborhood. Or depending on where you live, it could even be a data center. Now, when we talk about heat waste reuse, let's break this down. For a data center, data centers are highly energy intensive. They take a lot of energy, in part because they need energy to cool servers. And so then, obviously, if you're cooling servers, those servers are also generating heat. Now, the idea of heat waste is that, well, if there's a lot of heat being produced in a data center, that's technically a byproduct of whatever energy is being used to create the electrons that are either powering it or cooling it. And so in other words, you're taking an energy source, and it is throughout this process of whatever it's being used for, it's generating heat as a byproduct, as a waste product. Now, the idea that came about maybe about 10 years ago is, how can, maybe somebody said, wait a minute, we have a lot of heat, and maybe I'm in an area, let's say, that's especially cold. Why can't I take the heat that's being generated and actually pump it into, let's say, a local business or a school or some homes, and help them heat their home, heat water that they would use for boiling, you know, whether it be, you know, for showers or cleaning or whatever, you know? Or why can't we use this as a way to offset, let's say, natural gas? So, you know, and whatnot. And so this idea of heat waste within data centers and we reusing it has really come about. And to me, it's fascinating. And I will get into that, but I don't want to prompt it. I mean, otherwise I'll just sit here and talk about this probably for, you know, forever. So as an introduction to the topic, how's that? Am I missing anything that you think the audience may be interested in?
No, I think that's pretty solid, a good explanation from your end. And I guess, Miguel, do you have something to add to that? Or do you think that it's a topic that we usually talk about when we talk about cities, or should we be talking about it more?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we discuss kind of everything energy related to, when I say cities, it's all kinds of municipalities, you know, from the municipality with 2,000 inhabitants to the one with 2 million. So let's not forget about that, because that the smaller ones normally are the ones struggling most with heat, which is a source, a type of energy. And heat waste reuse, as you mentioned, it's the byproduct of heat from, it can be, you mentioned data centers, but even there are examples as well that mention using this type of heat, not only from such large infrastructure, but even from industry or, you know, refrigerators from supermarkets or big retails. So there's a lot to work on. Of course, if you look into an investment perspective, it makes more sense if you go to a data center because it's large and most likely will become will bring the best returns as soon as possible. But the value that it can bring to the cities, and sometimes it can outcome the value of investment that we are trying to make when it comes to the small scale ones. But we can then go into detail in a second. What's your opinion on this, Michael?
Well, there's a lot of context. I want to answer that. And to do that, I need to just put down a little extra context first. So I completely agree with everything you said, Miguel. And to kind of go a little bit further, and that is that data centers, especially if you look at what's called the FLAP markets, Frankfurt, London, Amsterdam, Paris, if we're thinking of talking just about Europe, those four markets are very hot right now for data centers, and a lot of regulation is coming up. There's a lot of even citizen pushback, for instance, about, like, you know, why are all these data coming up? Why are they taking up all of our green energy, et cetera? So there's really, it's really imperative that we start seeing digital infrastructure as not just a net taker, but also as like something that can add value, not just digitally, but also within the actual space that it's using too. And so data center heat waste reuse is one way, one of many tools that we can actually take this infrastructure and make it part of the community, make it actually something that's more than just value added for Facebook or Microsoft or whatever. And so I really love the idea that heat waste reuse, it combines sustainability with community development, as in, like, how can we actually promote the communities that we're in? It makes sense because heat is something, especially in cold countries, that is always hard to come by. And of course, from a policy point of view, it's kind of, I think, a little bit of a low-hanging fruit, because most of the time, what's missing is the incentive to, let's say, make a data center operator kind of invest in this. But if, let's say, we create a subsidy for heat pumps, and we now make that an attractive way that a data center can give back to the community, can support can make itself more sustainable and can obviously improve, kind of become, like I said, value added. And to go back to kind of one of your points is that you're absolutely right that it's not just the data centers that can do data, that can do heat waste reuse. It's pretty much any industrial application, I would say. But the idea is especially that we need to take holistic approaches to sustainability, particularly within urban settings. And I think transforming our ideas of what is waste, and rather taking our idea of waste and transforming that into something that is useful, that is applicable, whether it be to waste, whether it be to e-waste as well. Like the, you know, the idea that we throw out so many electronic devices. There are so many metals and minerals, including gold and silver and so many others in there that we could be recycling. So there's urban recycling, for instance, is part of that, you know, for, so there's a lot that we could say. Sorry if I'm talking too much. I do not want to bore your listeners.
No, I think it's better that you talk a lot more than me. So I please go ahead. That's how it should be. But I would just hand off to Miguel also to, you know, follow up on that.
No problem at all, because everything that you're talking about here, the goal of encapsulating it in within a short conversation, all of the topics, it's very, very hard. I think for all of us. And I understand you. And I'll just want maybe the other perspective, because you're talking about, again, a lot about urban environments, and the ones struggling with the most energy poverty as well are the ones that are not urban, more rural. And these ones also can take the same advantage as the others from heat waste reuse or to industry or for any other reasons. But sometimes they lack the infrastructure to do it, right? So if you look at the Nordics, they have a lot of district heating. So this is a perfect scenario for using heat waste reuse, right? You just, there are N cases that we could, yeah, I can see you already.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing because you so right on by mentioning district heating. And this is something that actually excites me about data center heat waste reuse. Especially, but just, you know, any industrial application of heat waste reuse. Bear in mind, I am actually not an expert about this. I'm not a thermo engineer. I'm not I'm not somebody that's worked extensively on this for years. I can point to those people, but I'm just so excited about the promise of this and at the fact that whether you're in an urban setting or a rural setting, much of the kind of positive momentum behind this can actually be done at the local level. And that's what's exciting. You don't need an international treaty. You don't need to lobby the European Parliament. You can go and talk to your mayor, to your district heating utility, you know, to your local utility, whatever. You can say, like, why isn't this something that we're thinking about? How can we do this? To me, the issue is stakeholder engagement, not money, not technology. The technology exists. It's all about pricing to make sure that the heat can be sold in a way that's profitable for the data centers themselves. It's all about making sure that, for instance, heat pumps and the underlying infrastructure that would need to take, let's say, the waste to wherever it needs to go, that is managed, that is processed, that it can be it can actually be ported from one place to another. And then third is just an enabling environment, whether that be regulatory and policy, whether that be with the different actors involved, because this is a complex ecosystem. And so it's not just like taking a hose and putting it into somebody's house, like, you know, from the data center. There obviously needs to be a lot of steps in between, but not that many, you know, in other words. So as long as the infrastructure is there, as long as there's kind of the will politically or in terms of stakeholders and community to actually make this happen, I think it's possible. And there are multiple applications already. So it's not like there's a lack of case studies out there.
I think I would debate a bit on the part that you mentioned that it's just stakeholder engagement. I think it's super clearly important to have the buy-in of all stakeholders. But as every time, if we are putting this sort of very heavy infrastructure, I think the investment side is also very, very important. It's not that it doesn't exist. it's just very important to be taken into consideration, because sometimes there are investments that are made not to be profitable, are made to make well-being of the people. And that's very hard to explain most of the times when you are doing these type of projects. But I think that's something we can agree, right? And
absolutely. So, sorry for being a bit imprecise with my language. I'm so used to saying political will that I obviously, as it relates to politicians or politics and legislators, but I really should have meant buy-in. I actually agree with you, and I do want to kind of amend what I said. I do mean buy-in from all stakeholders, and that's why I really kind of, I should stress that it's not just about policymakers or local regulators or utility companies, but it is also about the infrastructure operators themselves. And this is why we say we need to make sure that it's profitable, because otherwise it will be harder. Now, that's not to say that it's not better in many other ways. It's definitely better for communities. It's definitely beneficial to the planet and to our local environments. It is taking a waste product that would just be normally vented into the atmosphere and using it for something useful. So there's all that. But of course, where it becomes a bit trickier is getting all these actors aligned and on board. And so, yes, I'm sorry, Miguel, again, don't mean to. I completely agree with you. And thank you for clarifying that.
No, I think it's important sometimes to have a bit more of discussion. If we agree with each other all the time, then it gets boring, right?
So, fair enough.
So maybe we can bring now one of the segments of the podcast. Tamlin has handed over that part to me, which is actually the one that we want you to choose something and not to agree with everything.
Okay.
So,
just to clarify, it's really a this or that kind of a question. You have to answer very quickly, right off the top of your head, which one,
okay.
and then afterwards you can explain your answer.
Sure,
exactly.
Oh, this is exciting.
Model. It's one of my favorite segments too. By the way, it's called Roll with the Punches. I'm handing it off to Miguel. Go ahead, Miguel.
It's a pleasure. So I'll crack on though. Then you say it, and as Tamlin mentioned, you have a few seconds to explain why you think it. So first one, are you ready?
I am ready.
Walking or cycling?
Cycling.
Why is that?
I just it's incredible. It's like the rush of riding in a car where you can just feel the wind. Your face, but you're getting to where you need to go to. You're not using any fossil fuel energy, and you're exercising. That's like four positives right there in one.
Okay. Let's go to the next one. Heat pumps or district heating and cooling?
I would say district heating and cooling, because I think that that at scale, you can probably have more sustainability. But, oh, that's a tough one. Why would you ask me that? Both. I want both.
Okay. Yeah. I like your answer.
You have to choose.
Yeah, fair enough.
Next question. Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk?
Oh, neither. None of us should ever support these like billionaire space cowboys who think they can just exploit everybody for their own gains. But maybe I'm being way too socialist.
Yeah. It's okay.
You have to choose, Michael. If you have to choose one, the other one goes away though.
If I had to choose, I would choose Musk, because I used to be quite the Musk follower. But I think maybe his money got to his head, or he just lost a lot of sleep over the past 6 years, and he's just kind of gone off the deep end for me. He used to be very inspirational to me, though.
I'm with you on that one.
I won't express my opinion because I have to ask the next question. We are almost at the end, but
sure.
So, past or future?
Future, because the past is over. You can't go back to it. We can study it. We can reimagine it. But the future is what matters, because everything today impacts tomorrow.
Very wise. And the last one is especially tailored for you. So,
right.
Belgrade or Beirut?
Oh, are we talking about Beirut of today or Beirut of 10 years ago? Because if it's Beirut of 10 years ago, definitely Beirut. But if it's the Beirut of today, then definitely Belgrade.
We understand the time differences, so we allow you this double answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I think that now we can continue on. I guess this is also what we touched on so much before, that this definition of, you know, society and governance and technology combining is quite differentiated, and you can pull it apart in different ways, right? So this is a question that we like to ask every single person that comes on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And each time we get a different answer, which is the fun part of it. So there's no wrong or right answers, of course. But to you, what is a smart city?
So before I answer this, I just want to preface it by letting you all know that I've been working in internet governance and internet policy for the past 6 years. So my answer might be a little bit more broad than most. But for instance, a smart city to me is kind of a way of being. It's a way of existing specifically in a municipal setting that is using technology to the betterment of its citizens. It is using technology to help make the city itself more livable, to make it more sustainable, but it's also one that respects citizens' rights, citizens' privacy. It's one that coexists with security. And it's something, I think, that is solely resident and citizen-driven, not purely profitable for companies or used in such a way to, deepen the status quo of those in power. So to, in other words, make their power more cemented.
Yeah, very nice. Miguel, do you also want to answer that question?
I fully agree with Michael. Some answers might be more on point, but I think it's important to have the high level to the lower level overview. So meaning from the macro perspective to the micro one, because they are connected, of course.
Great. Thank you. And so I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk to me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for hosting me. And we could speak all day. I could go on about this. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. And thanks, Miguel. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you at the next stop on the journey to a better urban life.
You have to go out for a traditional Balkan meal. That is always a good way to start your night and then to end with a lot of fun.
I've had that before, actually, in other countries.
So but you're halfway there.
Yeah, halfway there.